This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davey, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in for Terry Gross.
The guy is stable.
Maybe, but 9 out of 100 times, asymptomatic patients have lesions that require surgical repair. How about that, Dr. Pratt? How about that? Talk to me now.
That's actor and comedian John Leguizamo as Dr. Ernesto Clemente in the TV series ER. Leguizamo was also appearing in theaters as Sid, the disrespected sloth, in the animated film Ice Age: The Meltdown. Leguizamo has appeared in more than 50 films and has built a devoted following for his stand-up comedy and one-man plays, which draw heavily on his childhood in an ethnically rich neighborhood in New York. In a review of his show Freak, which earned 2 Tony nominations, The New York Times' Ben Brantley said that when Leguizamo inhabits characters from his childhood, it seems less an act of impersonation than an instance of possession. There's a whole city of people inside this young man's slender frame. When I spoke to Leguizamo last July, he had just starred in a Spanish-speaking film called Crónicas. It's now out on DVD. Although Leguizamo was born in Colombia, he was raised in New York and was faced with the challenge of acting in Spanish. John Leguizamo, welcome back to Fresh Air.
All great to be back. I love NPR and Fresh Air.
You've been performing a long, long time in English, doing a lot of Latino characters.
Yeah, not Spanish.
Yeah, was it hard to act in Spanish for you?
Oh, yeah. It was one of the hardest things I had to do. I mean, I was born in Latin America. I was born in Colombia and came here when I was 3. And my parents spoke Spanish at the house, but I spoke English back. So this was a punishment because I regret I didn't speak back to them in Spanish because I wasn't as fluid or as free. Luckily, it worked right into my character that I was creating, because this character I was creating was a journalist, very ambitious, very controlling.
Who lives in Miami, right?
Who navigates between, you know, and people in Miami, those journalists over there, they navigate between Spanish and English so easily and fluent in both and you know, very articulate in both. And so I want to represent that as well.
You've played so many different roles as an actor, and you've studied acting. But I'm wondering if you had a situation here where part of your brain had to concentrate on just getting the language right, and whether, if it made it harder to just sort of let that, you know, that spirit that gets unleashed in your performances thrive.
No, that was it. That, you hit right the nail on the head, man. That's exactly what happened. I mean, I definitely had to focus much more on language. I mean, I had to spend, like, weeks memorizing the dialogue in advance, which I never do. I always, like, learn my dialogue the morning of. And I had to get a tutor and a coach, you know, and every time I improvise, the director yelled, cut. Because my Spanish was, you know, it was kind of, I have a third grade vocabulary and grammar, you know, and grammar might be even less. You know, I sound like me want interview you come here, you know.
Wouldn't cut it for Latino audiences.
No, I mean, right, I was supposed to be a college graduate, really bright journalist, really ambitious, not talking, you know, poder hablar español, gracias. Wasn't going to cut it.
Well, you know, a lot of your fans know something about your upbringing from the one-man shows that you have written and performed over the years. Especially
too much, perhaps.
Yeah, well, maybe. One of them, called Freak, you've described as sort of what, semi-demi, quasi-autobiographical. You were born in Columbia. You grew up in Jackson Heights, right?
In New York City.
In Queens.
Yeah, Bridge and Tunnel.
Which was like a real ethnic mix. And were you a mimic as a kid? I mean, did you make your parents and your brother laugh?
Yeah, I mean, I was always trying to get laughs in the house because it was the only time I didn't get beatings. So I was always trying to be mad funny on the street, you know, in school, wherever I was. I mean, I was kind of a short guy, and I don't know why I got picked on a lot in school. I don't know why. I mean, my parents and I were broke, and you know how it is in ghetto schools. It's all about your sneakers that you have and the jeans, and they got to be the right brand. And if you have like the mad cheap, you know, generic pants and sneakers, you're going to get picked on it. So I got picked on a lot, and so it made me have to be funny to defend myself.
And how would that work? I mean, you'd just somebody about to pop you and you'd crack them up?
I would make them laugh, you know. Yeah, exactly. I'd have to make the class laugh and laugh at the other guy and, you know, put him down. And, you know, sometimes I had to throw down. I had to fight because there's a point where laughter is not going to defend you. You
right.
Better have some fisticuffs.
So you did some of that too. Well and Freak, we see some members of your family, and I wanted to play one cut here. This is a you're reenacting both sides of a conversation with your father, who in this case has sort of gotten is drinking a bit and is sort of sharing some of his philosophy with you. And again, this is my guest, John Leguizamo from the one-man show Freak, and he is playing both himself and his father in this.
You're so lucky to have a dad like me. I could be out there just f***ing some hot, stinking women. Oh, yeah, but am I doing that? No. No, because I'm here spending quality time. Come on, Papi, I'll give you a shot. Come on. No, it's happy juice. Come on.
No, Dad. It tastes like dookie. Why don't you just quit drinking, Dad?
Because I'm not a quitter.
That was my guest, John Leguizamo, from the one-man show Freak. It's still funny, isn't it?
You mind if I laugh at myself?
Go ahead. How close is that to your dad? It's interesting. He says he's not a quitter. I mean, he was a guy of ambition, but if this is to be believed, he was really tough on you and your mom. They split up when you were 13, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I took artistic license with my dad. But, I mean, it's based on two elements. You know, my dad was great when he was drunk. He was the friendliest he ever was. And the other times he was a mean son of a bitch, you know. That's the way he was. He was very ambitious, and he liked the ladies and whatnot. And, you know, but when he drank, he was, like, friendly and fun, and you could goof with him and all that. So those are the best times I had with my dad.
Now, I read that you, at some point when you were a kid, you were sent back to Colombia to live for a while. What led to that?
Well, I was sent back when I was 14 because I was running with a crew that was kind of tough, and I gotten arrested and whatnot, and I was with a rough crowd, you know, and my mom knew that, you know. I was, you know, hormones had kicked. I was becoming really popular in school, and I had a lot of opportunities. You know, I was very popular, and I liked the girls and whatnot. And so they sent me to Colombia to pull me away from all this and to separate me from that.
And what was the experience like being in Colombia? Was it just a break from
bad habits? I was depressed. Yeah, I was depressed because I was the man here in New York City. I was having such a great time. And all of a sudden, you know, the language was a shock. And I was in this, you know, they put me in this, like, really wealthy school with all these rich socialites. And that, you know, it was a big cultural shock for me in terms of language. And you know, these kids had money, and I came from not having money. So it was all very strange and weird. And, you know, it was a lonely time for me. But it, you know, made me solid. I played a lot of basketball.
Uh-huh. You come back, and what got you into performing seriously, not just goofing off with your friends?
Well, you know, it was. I think you always have to have intervention, and I think you always have to have a mentor, especially when you're somebody like myself. I mean, I was able to make people laugh, and I was funny, but I was also disruptive. And this math teacher, Mr. Zufa, whose name rhymes with loofah, said to me, John, why don't you stop, wasting your life and your time? Why don't you become a comedian or an actor? Why don't you do that with your life instead of, you know, just disrupting my class? And, you know, I was a punk, and I said, you know, F you. But I went home, and I listened to him, and I looked in the yellow pages, and I found an acting school. And I started going to acting classes. And from there, you know, I found myself. I did this one scene about this troubled youth who was in therapy and all this. And I hit the zone. I got all these offers to be in NYU movies. And it was just, I hit this zen moment in my life, this zone where I felt, this is what I want to do. This is what I can do.
A lot of your material you developed from, you know, your experiences in the neighborhood and with your family. And one thing that I was curious about, you know, your parents broke up when you were 13, and at the end of your stage show, The Freak, I mean, you reenact a pretty tough fight between your mom and dad. I mean, there's some pretty painful family stuff here. It's very funny, but, you know, but it's real stuff. And I'm curious,
yeah,
what mom and dad thought when they saw their lives in your one-man show.
Oh, they weren't happy at all. My parents were so, they were devastated. I mean, and the funny thing is that they don't see themselves in there, and they think I'm making it up. And I was like, these are actual words that I recalled my whole life with that big fight between my parents. It was kind of brutal. Those were actual words. I didn't really add too much to that beat. You know what I mean? I added, you know, some humor here and there on the sides, sort of like to, you know, balance it out. But a lot of those words were you know, verbatim. And they were just devastated. And then, you know, then they start to admit that, you know, maybe, you know, they weren't the best parents. And when I heard that, I was very happy. I like to hear a confession. It's what I wanted. And I got, you know, it was tough at first, but then we got closer and, you know. But, you know, it's this material. The problem is when you put material like this out there as so public, it lives on. You know, they constantly play it on HBO and they constantly play it everywhere, you know. And all of a sudden my parents have to hear it and their friends call them up. And, you know, it opens up wounds constantly. You know, that's the problem with that.
Right. The revelation is one thing, but the repetition is another.
Repetition wears down, you know, wears down the family unit a bit. You know, but, you know, I'll get close to them again. It always... There's phases. We go through phases. But it's the fact that it lives on in perpetuity that's going to always be a, you know, I always constantly have to apologize, constantly have to make up.
Well, I want to play another piece from Sexaholic, A Love Story. The one I wanted to play here was where you recount the beginning of the relationship with Teenie, who is now your wife.
Oh, right. Yes.
And she is sort of, this is a whole different kind of relationship for you, and she's kind of laying down some rules about how she looks at life and relationships.
Okay, John, before you get serious, let me tell you all about myself, okay? I'm very practical, okay? I'm a Jew. And I don't want anything from you that I can't give back to you, okay? Because I've worked hard on myself, so you don't have to. I just want you to be there for me sometimes when I need you, and then we're golden, okay? So let's play it by ear. Whatever happens, happens. Okay, have fun. Go. And I applauded too, because she was amazing. And I didn't want to mess this up, so I was really hard on myself to mature. So when my therapist said, "Congratulations, John, you are now emotionally 12 years old. 13, here we come."
And all three voices there are my guest, John Leguizamo, from his one-man show, Sexaholic, A Love Story. You know, the reason I wanted to play that, apart from the fact that it's funny, is you talking to a therapist. And I read somewhere once that you had to quit therapy because it was ruining your comedy. Is that right?
Right. I mean, I went to therapy, I guess, since I was 17 till I was about 21. And because the high school required it, otherwise it wouldn't let me back in. And, yeah, you know, I was a class clown and I was, you know, I constantly needed attention. You know, I was like a, you know, like a bottomless pit of attention. And therapy sort of healed me, and it took away all that. And all of a sudden, I wasn't being as funny. I didn't have the desire. You know, I was normal. You know what I mean? So it was very weird to be normal and not be funny anymore. I kind of miss my old self, which is now I see it helps me because, you know, I have control. I have an on and off switch.
Well, you know, in your earlier stage shows, I mean, in Mambo Mouth, I mean, it was based, as I recollect, on seven characters. One of them was a guy named Giacomoto, who is a Hispanic guy who appears to be Japanese and is there to show Hispanic people how they cannot seem Hispanic by seeming Japanese. And it sounds like a very funny bit. And you were accused of reinforcing a lot of ethnic stereotypes. And, you know, one of your shows was called Spikorama, and you used that kind of terminology. And I'm wondering how you reacted then to this idea that you were reinforcing stereotypes and whether you feel at all differently about it with some age.
Well, they were wrong. I mean, they were wrong. They were wrong. I thought they were wrong back then. I still
and
think
they're
wrong.
Wrong.
And they're still wrong, even more so. I mean, the piece was attacking Latin self-hate. That's what I was attacking. It wasn't attacking, you know, anything else. And Yakimoto, this Japanese guy, you know, I had slides of you know, things that people mock us for, that we mock ourselves for, and it was attacking that. You know, some people walked out of the theater crying and whatnot, but it was attacking self-hate and self-hate in Latin culture is very it's so built into our culture, it's so part of us, and it's a horrible thing, you know. And it's so hard for them to realize, you know, for a lot of people don't even realize that they think they're white, some people, and they forget that they have Indian and black in them. And it's very weird for me to, when I see these people, you know, with their faces like five shades lighter than their necks and you know, all that kind of stuff that happens.
Well, John Leguizamo, thanks so much for talking with us.
Dave, has been great.
John Leguizamo. He had a recurring role this season on ER. He's in theaters in the animated film Ice Age: The Meltdown, and he co-stars in The Groomsman, which premieres next week at the Tribeca Film Festival. Coming up, David Edelstein reviews the new film Look Both Ways. This is Fresh Air.